everyone. Welcome to the MRP Tech Podcast. This is episode number 85. My name is Matt, and this is the weekly podcast discussing everyday tech for everyday people. Thanks for joining me once again today. I think today's show is going to be an interesting one, a lot of special things going on today as I record on Wednesday, January 31st. Before I get into all of that, what I would like to do is I would like to read some feedback that I got from another host on the Podnuts Network. I got an email from Eric today. Eric is one of the hosts of Android App Addicts. He's been on several other shows as well on Podnuts. And this is in regards to my episode on number stations a few episodes ago. And I did get some feedback last week from that episode with something else that I talked about. But this one is actually regarding number stations. And this email from Eric, he says, Matt, I used to listen to shortwave a lot over the years. I'm 44 now, and in the 80s, as a kid, I would find and listen to the number stations. Back then, I thought there was some kind of clock for geniuses. I had no idea that they had such a story behind them. They were spooky and weird, but I couldn't stop listening to them. In my 20s, I would listen to shortwave radio in the garage while I was working on my car, and it sort of led me to podcasts such as the Power Hour and Alex Jones were broadcasting over shortwave bands, and then they would lead you to their website to download their shows. Thank you for your podcast. And it was really interesting from my perspective getting an email from somebody who listened to number stations during the Cold War era. Because the number stations, first of all, if you didn't listen to that show, number stations are signals that are broadcast over shortwave radio that anybody can listen to. In fact, and if you put a link in the show, I put a link in the show notes for the number stations episode. This was two episodes back, so probably episode 83, I believe. I put a link into an SDR radio station in the Netherlands. And if you plug in the frequency 4625, I believe, you'll get one of these number stations from Russia. Now, this one in particular, broadcasts a buzzer nonstop 24 hours a day. And every so often, you will hear commands given out in Russian, basically giving commands to the Russian military, supposedly. So oftentimes you'll hear just random numbers being broadcast out as well. These are for agents in the field who are decoding messages. And anybody can listen into them, but most people have no idea what they actually mean. So they were very, very popular in the 1980s during the height of the Cold War. And they're still used today in certain circumstances. And if you spend enough time listening to them, you can actually catch them. I was able to catch two transmissions within an hour, and you could actually record them using this station from the Netherlands, which I thought was really cool. I was glad to hear from Eric, and I'm glad that he sent that in because that's something that I had never heard of. I never had any idea what these number stations were all about. In fact, I actually questioned whether or not I was going to bring it up on the show. I think they're really fascinating, but I didn't want to go too far down the rabbit hole with a topic like this because there is a lot of urban lore and legend behind those things. But anybody who is a little bit tech savvy can go out and even if you don't have a radio license or you don't have any shortwave radio equipment, you can go online now and there's a whole community out there that monitors these transmissions and actually logs them and keeps track of them, which is kind of cool, I think. Eric also went on to say that he tried for his ham radio license about a year ago. I just went in and took the test. He didn't study for the test. And so what I did is for myself, when I got into radio stuff, I had no idea, absolutely no idea what I was getting into. I took it as a challenge to learn something new that I knew nothing about. So literally I knew zero about amateur radio. And you know, if you search around the radio communities, you know, there are basically two groups that as far as taking these exams goes. There's a group that suggests that you study, you learn the theory, you learn the math, you learn the formulas, and you really know your stuff before you go in and take the exams. And then there's also the community that says for the first license, the tech license, it's basically just a memorize the answers. All the answers are available online. Take practice quizzes, memorize the answers, get your license, and then learn afterwards. Now, I'm not going to argue with either party here on what is right with that. But in my case, I knew nothing. I listened to a couple audiobooks. They're called The Fast Track to Your Technician Class Ham Radio License, or The Fast Track to Your General Class Ham Radio License. And I'm actually listening to the third book, The Fast Track to Your Extra Class, Amateur Extra Class Ham Radio License. And so that's basically how I did. I listened to the audiobooks. I downloaded iOS apps, took a bunch of practice quizzes, and, decided I was ready to take the test, and then just found a test. And luckily, I had about a month to prepare, and I was able to pass the test. I'll go back. So basically, my point is, unless you're really going to spend the time and build yourself, 40-foot antennas near your house, and you're really want to dive deep into radio stuff, that's where I'd say you definitely learn the theory and everything else that goes with it. But if you just want to get your tech license just so you can start talking with people, most people will just suggest memorize the answers, take the practice tests, and then go on from there. And then you learn as you go. And that's what's cool about the radio stuff is it's a constant learning process. You're always learning something new. You have a license to keep learning, as a lot of people say. Okay, so where do I begin with today's episode? Today is January 31st. And there's a lot happening today. First of all, at the beginning of January, I had the opportunity to travel to a nearby lake that I live close to in the afternoon, early on in the month, and I was with my wife, and we actually, for the first time in my life, I actually watched the moon rise. I never really had experienced that before. I've seen sunrises and sunsets, but I never watched the moon rise before, and it was quite a fun experience. And this January, many of you have probably heard that there is a super blue blood moon happening this January. So what does that all mean if you've never heard of that? Super moon basically is the phenomenon where the moon appears particularly large in the sky because it is on its closest approach in orbit to the Earth. Or the perigee during a full moon. So that's the supermoon, where the moon appears larger in the sky. Next up is the blue moon. And it can appear, the definition of a blue moon, there's two different things. Number one is the moon appears bluish or is tinted a little bit due to dust particles in the atmosphere. But there's another definition where it's the second full moon in a calendar month. Now, usually the moon's orbit is between 28 and 29 days out of a month. So some months you will have two full moons. Now the blood moon, that definition is when there is a total lunar eclipse, the moon will appear brownish or reddish in color. So in this case, we have an approach by the moon where it is particularly close to Earth, where there is two full moons in a month and a lunar eclipse today, January 31st. And not only that, today happens to be my wife's birthday. So I just want to wish my wife a very happy birthday today. We actually have been kind of tracking the moon the last few weeks, and we've been very excited about this, and it was kind of fun to just go out and experience to the best that we could these events because they don't happen very often. And so what I want to talk about is how we did that. And basically, I mentioned we went down to a lake and we watched the moonrise. If you are interested at all in anything in regards to basically anything that orbits, like the space station, the satellites up in the sky, the moon itself, planets in orbit around the stars, planets around, in orbit around our sun, orbits are predictable, and you can actually go and find out exactly where you want to find a particular object in the sky. The moon obviously is easy because it is so large, and we see it just about every day. But tracking things like most people want to know sunrise and sunset. Not many people, I don't think, track the moonrise and moonset. And in our particular case, where we are, moon usually rises in the northeast. And in this case, it rose in the basically east, northeast, and set in the northwest the next morning. And how we find that out is we actually use two iOS apps. Actually three iOS apps. The first one that I want to talk about is Star Tracker, or Star Tracker Lite. There's a free version and a paid version. This can shows you all the constellations that are out there, and you can actually hold your phone up and see all the different constellations. You see the horizon, the planets, the sun. And I actually had an issue with my phone because the calibration in the gyroscope of my phone was actually off from what it was supposed to be. So I'm looking in an easterly direction, and my phone was saying I was looking west. If I was looking north, it would tell me I was looking south. If you've never fixed that problem or had that problem, if you drop your phone or something, you often will throw that calibration off. And the way to fix this is by making a figure eight symbol sort of in a horizontal direction, figure eight symbol, a bunch of times over and over and over, and turning your phone up and down in that figure eight formation. And then set your phone down and then do it again several more times. If you do that three or four times, you should calibrate your phone back to its original. So if you're looking at a compass on your phone, it'll be somewhat correct. So we were able to actually, as we were looking out into the lake, we were able to see where the moon was under the horizon and know that it was coming up very soon so that we could get some great photos while the moon itself came up over the horizon. It was really fun. I never had experienced a moonrise before, and that's quite odd because I'm usually interested in that stuff. But especially down by a lake where you have everything's in the clear, it was kind of fun to take a look at that. So we use Sky Tracker Lite to see where the moon was. There's a couple other apps out there. One is called Moonrise, that shows you basically where the moon is and what percentage of the moon is being seen. For instance, today we're getting a 99.3 or 99.8% full moon. So you actually get to see, based on your location, what the moon should be at. And what's also interesting about this app is that it also lets you go back in time all the way to 1900. And it lets you go all the way into the future to 2099, and you can track where the moon will be at that point in time on that particular date. So that's really kind of interesting in case you want to go back to a specific date, maybe the day you were born or the day a relative was born. You wanted to see where the moon was at during that time. I think that's kind of an interesting little fact because of the orbits being predictable. You can kind of go back in time. The next moon app that I want to talk about was called Moonphase. Now, this one comes in handy. It gives you the sunrise, the sunset, the moonrise, and the moonset by time. It also gives you the distance that the moon is at. For instance, right now, the moon is at 228,100 miles. Where the moon is at in its 29-day cycle, not only the altitude, but the degrees, the degrees where you can find the moon at in the sky and the current zodiac. So it talks about its the current cycle. It gives you, if you want to photograph it, it gives you like the golden hour when you're going to see the golden tones in the sky and the blue hour where you're going to find the most blue hues in the sky. Kind of an interesting app if you are out to take photos of the moon. If you know someone who's a professional photographer, like my wife is, you will be able to get those excellent pictures that you want. I am not a photographer by any means, and most of my photos turn out blurry, and so it's definitely an aid for those who want to take pictures of the moon, and especially for people like me who are clueless when it comes to those types of things. So, like I said, it's basically there's a lot going on today that most people kind of ignore, and it's kind of sad that that happens. You know, we have all these cool things that happen most of the time and sort of go unnoticed. I mean, I don't remember the last time that there was a super blue blood moon all the same day. And you know, it's like a once in a lifetime thing. So we got up early this morning and we ran out the door. I was on my way to work and was able to see the full moon in the sky. Didn't get to see the eclipse, the partial eclipse where I am, because I was driving through the mountains and the moon had gone below the mountains. You know, in certain countries or certain areas in the western part of our country, it was a total lunar eclipse. So I'm sure people on the West Coast were in for a treat this morning. And I bet you it was kind of fun to see that. And I do believe that in most cases, these events are live streamed over the internet and gives people a chance to see it, which is kind of cool. So fun facts about the moon. Just want to go over some things as I was putting together today's show. The moon actually isn't round. It's shaped like an egg. And the only reason it looks round is because one of the smaller ends with a circular silhouette is actually facing us. I thought that was interesting. The moon is actually bigger than Pluto. And one of the reasons why Pluto was demoted to a dwarf planet back in 2006. But don't worry, Pluto is still a planet in my heart. The moon is actually drifting away from us approximately 1.5 inches every year. And today the moon is usually generally in the area of 280,000 miles from Earth. It does go farther away, does get closer based off of a eccentric orbit that it does have. Most astronomers believe that the Earth was about 14,000 miles away from Earth at one point in time. A couple other fun facts for the moon. It would take 26 days for a commercial airplane to reach the moon. So if you're on a 747 traveling about 400 miles an hour, you'd take almost a month to get to the moon. Obviously, we can't do that because the 747s aren't going fast enough to get out of Earth's gravity. But on the other hand, you know, things like Apollo 11 only took 3 days. So you can imagine how fast they were traveling to get there. And many of us kind of notice that the sun and moon are the same size. So the sun is 400 times bigger than the moon, and is also 400 times farther away from us. So that's why they look so very similar in the same size in the sky. Kind of a unique situation that doesn't happen on very many planets with moons. A couple more, just a real quick fun facts as I'm going through a long list here. You know, the dark side of the moon is actually a myth. In reality, both sides of the moon see the same amount of sunlight. However, only one face of the moon is ever seen from Earth. And that's because the moon rotates around its own axis in the exact same time it takes to orbit the Earth. So the same side of the moon is always facing the Earth. Last fact. Okay. Well, last two facts. There's only been 12 people that walked on the moon, and hopefully we'll see that change again in the future. The last fact is the moon is definitely made of cheese. And so really a lot of cool fun facts today. Last week I mentioned that we are nearing finally after somewhere between 5 and 8 years, finally nearing the launch of the SpaceX Falcon Heavy. Over the last week, we've seen the static test fire for the Falcon Heavy. The Falcon Heavy has gone from horizontal to vertical several times. They have done not only a static fire, but several wet dress rehearsals to basically counting down all to zero, rehearsing the launch sequences without firing the engines, finally firing the engines for about 12 seconds. And then, barring any government shutdowns between now and the next few weeks, we will see Falcon Heavy launch. Originally, it was kind of slated for today, January 31st, but it did get bumped due to the shutdown, the brief shutdown a couple weeks ago, sort of delayed the static test fire for the Falcon Heavy. So what they did is they bumped it a couple of weeks, and in the meantime, they're going to launch another satellite that was due to be launched first to give their customer priority over the Falcon Heavy. And that launch is also happening today, Wednesday, January 31st, I believe at 4:25. So just another cool thing happening all at once with this podcast, the day that this podcast was recorded. The official launch date now is no earlier than February 6th, so next Tuesday, as I believe anywhere from 1:30 to 4:30 in the afternoon. And barring any bad weather or complications with a very complicated piece of machinery, we'll see probably one of the greatest shows we've seen in a long time for anybody who's interested and watching rocket launches. I'm even thinking about putting together something so my classes can watch this, but I don't know how that's going to work yet. These things can get delayed, so I don't know what I'm going to do. If I can catch it when it actually happens, or if I can watch the video afterwards. Just one of those things I'm really excited to seeing come to fruition after years and years and years of waiting and hearing about it, watching the rocket itself being developed, hearing the rumors about it. It's finally there. And I did read, putting this together with the theme for today, I did read this article the other day that explained that the way the planets are aligned right now and the current position of our moon, that when the Falcon Heavy launches its payload, which is Elon Musk's personal Tesla, as a test payload, they're going to launch it and put it into basically the same orbit that Mars is in. And so in order to do that, they actually will have to fly by the moon, which is kind of cool. And really looking forward to this. You know, some people will say that launching a Tesla into space really isn't that great of a thing to do at this point in time. Then should we really be doing that? I'm not going to argue that debate. I have mixed thoughts on it myself. But maybe one day there'll be a contest to see who can go retrieve that and bring it to Mars at some point in time. So really, again, excited for February 6th, the current expected launch date for Falcon Heavy. Basically, the Falcon Heavy, because it's using reused first stages from recovered Falcon 9 engines, this Falcon Heavy costs about $90 million to launch. The Delta IV Heavy costs about $400 million to launch. So you can see the saving there that happens, and bringing the expense of launching things to space way down, and still very expensive, obviously, but nowhere near what it has been in the past due to this ability to recover these first stage rocket cores. So the last thing I'm going to say is I really appreciate all the feedback that I've been getting recently. It's been nice to really interact with people. I have got a few emails over the last few weeks. So anytime that you feel like you have something to add to this show, please feel free to go to my website, mrptechreviews.com. You can hit the contact form there, and I'll get the message, and I will get back to you quickly, usually within a day or two, and I'll try to put your comments or questions on the show. And it really makes for some interesting segments here on the MRP Tech Podcast. So I definitely appreciate all the emails. Make sure to go check out Eric's show, Android App Addicts, on the Podnuts Network over at podnuts.com. That's a great show for anyone interested in Android apps or anything, basically anything Android related. So please go do that. Also, if you have a couple extra bucks to spend, go over to Podnuts and hit the donate button, or check out their Patreon page and support the network, because that's how the shows keep going. That's how the server space is paid for, all that stuff, which is all stuff that the Door-to-Door Geek takes care of. And we appreciate that very much from him. So that's going to do it for this week's episode. Thanks so much for listening. We'll see you next time.